My name is Jeff Simmons, and I am alcoholic.
Hi, Jeff!
Sober due to the grace of God, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and strong sponsorship since December 25th, 1994. I don't have to have one of these today. That's all my story. I'm done. That's about as insightful as I'll be tonight. I'm an alcoholic. I never, ever once ran into an old Milwaukee that I didn't like. And if it was free, I liked it even more. I suffer from the disease of alcoholism. I used to think that's because I'm from north of Minot, North Dakota. There's like 400 people there, and 350 of them are alcoholics. You think that means I would fit in, but I didn't. I'm just about full-blooded Norwegian. I might be wrong, but I think it was a little Finnish guy. He snuck in there and did his thing, and that's why I'm an alcoholic. I had no reason to ever be alcoholic. Many of you know my family, and as a matter of fact, the other sibling is here tonight with her 4.0 grade average and her success stories and her work ethic and all them things I don't have. She's sitting over there with some of her friends, and she even had more of them than I did. I just couldn't win. I had no reason to be an alcoholic growing up. Like I said, I grew up north of Minot. In a little predominantly farming community. I had a mom and a dad that were always there, always did what they said they were going to do. She came along when I was about 3 or 4, and that didn't work out. I asked them to send her back the day she got there, and I was holding resentments at 3. I had no reason to be alcoholic. That's the long and the short of it. You know, you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you hear some people that come from a broken home or had a rough childhood or grew up in a bad place. And I'm weak, man. I had none of that. I grew up in a great place. You know, the lawns were green and everybody had a dog and you got to ride bike without fear of getting shot or anything like that. Well, that's not entirely true. I rode my bike and I threw crab apples. And I had a pretty good life. But as far back as I can remember, I'm missing a piece of the puzzle. Because when I look at you and I talk to you, you've got something I don't. And I don't know what that is. And I felt that way my entire life. I felt I was at a disadvantage growing up because I got to kindergarten by way of preschool, which I thought was another kindergarten. So I thought I failed kindergarten. And that was a little stressful. I was a tough guy. I actually ran home and hid from Sunday school one day. There's lots of bad dudes there. I got into school and I got glasses right away and I became four eyes and all that stuff. And my feet were all messed up when I was born. You know, they were all pointed in like this and I don't remember it, but I'm sure it was traumatic. I had to wear these goofy boots, and before that, I had this brace that went on my legs, and it was terrible, even though I don't remember it. And it's hard to be stylish when you're wearing these clodhopper boots, and you got these thick Coke bottle glasses, and everybody can hear you coming down the hall. You know, it sounds like the cavalry's coming. And you go to gym class, and it's ridicule, nothing but ridicule. And this is how I felt growing up. I just never felt like I belonged. It seemed like the bad kids in the class. I wasn't the bad kid. I was the not even their kid. Nobody knew I was there until I'd do something stupid. You know, the bad kids, they were smart enough to get away with doing something stupid. When I did something stupid, I did it in front of everybody so that everybody knew. And then I'd get caught, and then everybody'd ridicule me. Oh, you got caught. And not really, they did that. I wanted some attention. I didn't even know then that's what I wanted, but I just wanted to feel like I belonged, like I wasn't missing that piece of the pie. And, you know, growing up in Glenburn, North Dakota, there isn't a lot to do. The same people you play with are the same people you play with every day, and I had my problems with them. I guess I would have never thought I was alcoholic, but the very first time I went to see a psychologist, I don't even know what he was, but I know he dealt with something in my head. I was in the fifth grade, and I had to go because I was so emotional and crying all the time that nobody liked me. The only person that understood me was the dog. And he did. And he was always there. And maybe that was a sign right there, a little red flag. Maybe they should have got me a drink when I was in the fifth grade to take the edge off. I don't know. I did get a drink before I was 10. I didn't get drunk till after 10. You know, I'm a late bloomer. I suffered a gang snuggie when I was about 10 years old. That is the very first time you've ever heard that. There was like six or seven of them, and they tore me off my bike and then tore my underwear off me. And my reaction to that was to pedal home bare-assed, I might add, and grab a gun. Seemed like the right thing to do at the time. So I've suffered the humiliation of the gang snuggie and riding home bare-assed and getting the gun, and then my dad finds me. And then the bare-assed thing took on a whole new meaning. And it was a bad day. Anybody have a bad day? I had a bad day. And that kind of sums up early childhood for me. Exciting, I say. You know, I always needed to do something to fit in. When the guys were playing football, I had to be playing piano. My mom thought I should really play the piano. And I wasn't okay with that. You know, they'd be out having fun, and I'd be stuck playing the piano. And I was kind of good at it, but I didn't want to be good at it because all the fun was out there. For me, growing up, the fun was always on the other side of the fence. The grass is always greener over there. That's where I got to be. And I'm going to do whatever I can to get there. And I get there, and I get over to the other side of the fence, and everybody left. I got Zubas. I remember when I got Zubas. I got Zubas after everybody left that side of the fence. But I wore them to school anyway. And I had great parents. When I got into junior high, that whole puberty thing and girls and all that stress, I really couldn't handle it. But this magical thing came into my life, and it was called alcohol. And I don't know about you, but the first time I had a drink of alcohol, it was gone. I wasn't on pins and needles anymore. All of a sudden, I could talk to you. And I could talk about anything you wanted to talk about. I could even lie about it so convincingly that you would believe me. And I learned that alcohol makes it okay to be me. I'd never been okay being me all my life. And alcohol did that for me. It just, bang, it was there. And I can belong. And I'm feeling these feelings when I'm 13, 14 years old. And it was so good for me. I brought some friends home after school before basketball practice and mixed up some whiskey cokes. And we all had a little toot before we went to practice. And I must have held it better than them guys because they looked foolish. But one guy's still resentful about that. I've gotten over it, but he ain't. Drinking did it for me. I went into junior high and I learned how to drink. And I could see these people ahead of me. You know, kids that are ahead of me in school or people that were elders in the community. And I figured out how this small-town rural America thing worked. You get a nice pickup, you get a farm, get some government subsidy checks, and you go to the bar. And the status symbol where I'm from is how many doors you have on your pickup sitting in front of the bar. And like 12 doors on a Ford, it was ridiculous. I seen that. I didn't see my mom and dad doing any of those things. I seen them at home on Friday night making root beer floats for their kids. But I seen those people at the bar, and I'd drive my bike by, and I'd hear laughter in there, and the smoke is billowing out the door, and I thought, oh, that's cool. And that's where I wanted to be. I don't know why. That's where the action was. And then when I found drinking, I figured out that I could go shopping in front of the bar. Because if they're in there drinking, they aren't guarding what they got in their box. It's like a buffet, only you don't pay. For free, baby. And I went with it, you know. I always did just enough in school to get by, and I mean the bare minimum. If you needed a D to play sports, I got a D. I didn't bother with the C because it was a waste of my time. I just got the D. And alcohol started to become part of who I am because now I wasn't the goofy guy with goofy glasses anymore. Well, I maybe was, but I didn't perceive it that way. I had this perception the whole time that I don't fit in, that I don't belong, that I don't look like you and I don't act like you and I know I don't feel like you. If you had it like me, you'd do something drastic. And booze was working. It takes all that away. And I went through high school with flying colors. I graduated 22nd in my class. There was 23 of us. And I had to check my diploma when I went across the stage. And I graduated by a point in the last test of my senior year. And whether I actually earned it or she wanted to get rid of me, I don't know. Doesn't matter. I graduated. And I went about my life. I'm 18, and I'm supposed to be getting out of the house, and things are going to be good for me. And I'm going to go to school. I didn't go to school because I wanted to. I went because Mom and Dad wanted me to. But I was having fun. I was drinking, and it was working for me. And I'm meeting people. And somewhere in this time, I met her, and she was wonderful. I could drink, and she would babysit me, and we got along great. And more of her will come up later on in my talk. But things were good. And when I got to college, that fear kicked in. I didn't know what it was at the time. I just knew it was uncomfortable. When I got there, there's all these people that I don't know. And I've been kind of in my own little spot, you know, with people I know and people I can drink with. And by God, we're going to set the world on fire, but I don't want to know anybody else. And I get to college, and there's all these people everywhere. And a couple things happened that summer, minor details, I think, drinking. And I go to college with the resolution that, Jesus, you know, I really was a loser in high school, graduating by 1 point. It was cool for like a week, but then after that I realized I'm a loser. And I'm going to do something different. I want to make something of myself. I want to be somebody. I didn't want to be somebody like a famous nun that helps lots of people. I wanted to be somebody like, ooh, that guy owns a lot of shit. Look at him. Well, you know, you got to have goals. And I went to school, and booze takes the edge off. I found people that drank like me. They were doing some other stuff that I didn't do. But, you know, it's all good. So I'm drinking with these guys, and I'm going to class, and I'm going to make something out of myself. And I've set a hectic schedule for myself. Study all day, drink all night, don't go to bed, study all day, drink all night. And like the third day of school, I said, screw that, I'm drinking. And mine at State became my own personal little shitty apartment. And that's what I did for my college career, is I drank. And I received a letter from a gal a month into college saying, what are you doing with yourself? I seen you this weekend and you were a mess. And I had to do some piecing together there because I didn't even know where I was that weekend. Because drinking's accelerating for me. All of a sudden, it isn't just fun anymore. Now I'm blacking out and I'm forgetting things. And I'm starting to do some things I'm probably not too proud of. And I remember, you know, being in school and the guidance counselor putting this list in front of me of goals I want to achieve in my life. And I knocked heads with my guidance counselor. She was my mother. And she even taught sex education and drug something or other. That was awkward. And let me tell you something about guidance counselors. They run in pairs because my sister is one now, too, and she's living with me. Isn't that grand? This gal says, what are you doing to yourself? And I call her up and I said, it doesn't matter what I'm doing to myself. This college thing is great. I'm partying every night and I'm meeting people and it's cool. And things started to happen, you know. Like any good alcoholic, my run stopped. And it didn't just kind of slow down a little bit. I hit a brick wall and I fell right down on the floor like a cartoon guy. Just and it quit working. It was like a light switch. It just quit working. All of a sudden, I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and the edge isn't getting removed anymore, and I have to drink more. And then if drinking ain't working, well, maybe if I take some of them pills, that'll help. And I started dropping speed and drinking as much as I could, and I figured out that the more speed I took, the longer I could stay up drinking. And in a matter of a couple of months, I find my way on the way to treatment. And I wasn't real excited about that. I got to back up a little bit. I didn't go directly to treatment. I went to my alcohol evaluation first. And I don't know how long they take now, but back then, back in the day, they took like 4 hours. And that gal was writing the whole time and giving me that snooty little look over the glasses like, uh-huh. And, oh, really? And we weren't going to hang out. we get to the end of this marathon evaluation, and she says, let me get this straight. You drank this many beers this many times a day for this amount of time. And I turned and I said, baby, you drink pounders. And she had to rewrite the whole thing. And a little sweet justice for all you drunks out there. I ended up in treatment. And I ended up in treatment because my life was a mess. I ended up in treatment because booze didn't take the edge off anymore. And the pain of life got to be too great for me. I started to do some things I wasn't proud of. And, I culminated my drinking career with trying to kill myself, running down the train tracks like a fool at 2 o'clock in the morning. And that train track had been abandoned for years. Effect, baby. It's all for effect. And pay attention to me. And, earlier that night I had pulled a gun on a house full of people. And that isn't why I drank. That isn't what I wanted to do when I went out on Saturday night. I didn't stand in front of the mirror shaving thinking, I'm going to pull a gun at a house party and really get a reaction. It never crossed my mind. But these emotions are just too much for me. And when booze isn't taking the edge off of them, I don't know what to do anymore. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have that information. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous with this perception, if I quit drinking, my problems will change. That's it. I drink too much. I get stupid. Some things happen that aren't my fault, by the way. If I back off the booze, I'll be fine. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in Minot, North Dakota, and there was these fools running around talking about having a good life and things are going to be great for them, and work the steps and talk to a sponsor and go to a regular meeting and wear a tie. And that's another topic entirely. But I went to meetings just enough to get by. And I got physical sobriety. I got physical sobriety in treatment, and it just carried through the first couple of years I was sober. And what I learned in the first 2 years is that my life isn't a mess because of booze. My life is a mess because everywhere I go, I take me with. I learned that my disease is its root is in selfishness and self-centeredness. And that I always want what I want when I want it, and damn you if you get in the way because I'm running over you. And I didn't know that. I had no idea. I just thought that I had a drinking problem. And if I just don't drink, I'll be fine. And at the end of 2 years of that, I was either going to drink or I was going to kill myself. And I had a baby on the way, and my life was a mess. And this guy comes bebopping into this same meeting I've been going to for 2 years, and he's happy, and his life is good, and things are happening for him. And I said, Jeff, can you be my sponsor? And he said, yeah, it's about time. We didn't think you were going to make it. And he was right. I was that close. And that guy is my sponsor today. You know, Jeff is the guy that has answered the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning or Christmas Eve night or Easter morning. He's always been there. I think that, that my life wouldn't be near what it is if his life wasn't a part of it. If he wasn't a solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous that he became by a sponsor working with him and a sponsor working with that guy and so on and so forth. My sponsor has taught me everything I know about life. He's clarified it for me. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me everything I know about life. I didn't know how to balance a checkbook when I got here. I didn't know that I should pay rent on time. The bill collectors will leave you alone if you pay your bills. That was all rocket science to me. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. A lot of things had to be simplified for me when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't feel good doing what you're doing, change it. Ooh, that's deep. Took me a couple tries to get that one right. Have a regular meeting. Talk to your sponsor once a week. Do the next right thing. Be of service to somebody else. These were all things that I didn't know anything about, you know. And my sponsor never once condemned me for not knowing them. He was always very patient, very tolerant, and very understanding. And, well, not all the time, but most of it. He helped me, you know, with those phone calls. He started taking me through the steps. And I remember doing my my very first fourth step, and it was about time to do the fifth step, but I've been dragging my feet for 9 or 10 months. And one of the other guys that he was sponsoring said, hey, I'm doing my fifth step next week, woohoo! Kelvin and I were in a foot race to our sponsor because we had to be next and didn't want to be the guy getting left behind. And, you know, it went from there. I moved to Fargo sometime in 1999 because that her that was in my life that I had drug into alcoholism, my alcoholism, she couldn't take it anymore. You know, we tried it off and on for 7 years. And it's amazing what people will go through when they love somebody. And, you know, as much as I loved her, I love me more. And be honest, right? And that was the bottom line. That selfishness and self-centeredness and that fear that corrodes my life, that's what ended that relationship. And I moved here because there was nothing left for me in Minot. My sister and my family were there, but they can't keep me sober. You know, some of the guys from Minot started moving to Fargo, and I came with because I can't make it on my own. And I spent the last couple months in Minot sleeping on Calvin's couch because I couldn't be alone at night, and I was almost 5 years sober. The disease of alcoholism had me. And I got to Fargo, and it was kind of like a new beginning. You know, I'm pretty sure that had I not came here, things may have turned out different. But it made no sense to me at the time. I have this little girl, she's 3 years old, living in Minot. I'm going to move to Fargo with a guy that's been sober for 3.5 seconds, Zach. And I'm being generous. And live there and go to this new meeting that's starting up, and Bolte's there, and I don't really like Bolte. And he's a little stiff. That never gets old, does it? I didn't want to be here, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in Fargo, North Dakota, and at a meeting I didn't want to be at, around people I didn't want to meet, and my sponsor was here, and that's why I was here. And I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. In spite of myself, I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd call him every day. I want to go home. I don't like it here. It's too hot. The next day it'd be, I don't like my job. You don't have a job. Well, I don't like it anyway. And some reason I stayed, whether it was blind faith, more than likely it was the big guy upstairs watching out for me, because I believe he watches out for fools and small children, and I'm not a small child anymore. You know, Fargo Alcoholics Anonymous has become a big part of my life today. I've learned everything I know in AA, but I've learned a majority of it in Fargo. I've learned how to be of service and how to be helpful, how you should be accountable and be on time and be where you say you're going to be when you say you're going to be there. Do what you say you're going to do. If you have a job at your home group, do your job. And I work construction, and I have for most of my sobriety. And I'd always call my sponsor and say, God, I got this big road job going. You know, I don't think I'm going to be there. The only reason you got that job is because of that meeting. Maybe you should be there. And he'd say it like that. And he's been right every time before. Why wouldn't he be right this time? And, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. I have not been perfect in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have not always done everything I'm supposed to do. But my life is better because of the times I have. It is easier to be me if I'm making it easier to be you. If I can be of service and be helpful and shake the hand of that guy that's staring at my shoes or staring at his shoes. If I can talk to not only the person that's new here tonight, but if I can talk to the person that's been here a while, but is quiet and isn't comfortable with their life and doesn't know what they want to do. If I can somehow be helpful to that person, then I can stay sober another day. I was under the delusion for a long time. If I did the steps right, I'd be fine. If I am perfect at my home group, I'll be fine. It doesn't matter. What matters today is treating people the way I want to be treated, being of service, doing what you say you're going to do. I've been chasing that little girl around the countryside for the last 7 years, and it's every other weekend. Not all the time, but most of the time it's every other weekend, and sometimes that gets to be a grind. And I start to feel sorry for myself and think, oh, God, I can't do it another weekend, and this is terrible, and damn it, why do I have to do this? And, you know, I get real ungrateful, and I don't always see things for the way they are. A couple of years ago, I was making that trip, and it was a Saturday morning, and there was something going on in town in AA, and all my friends are there, and all my AA buddies are there, and that's where I want to be, and I'm driving down the road, and the longer I drive, the madder I get. And finally, I call my sponsor, and I say, I can't do this. I can't make this trip again. It just, I'm shot. I work too much, and I got this going on, and he's, shut your mouth. You know, my sponsor hasn't been real harsh with me many times, but this time he was. He said, shut your mouth. You need to be a man and do what you're supposed to do. Go be a daddy to that little girl and quit feeling sorry for yourself for a half hour at least, for Christ's sake. And he hung up. I was pissed. You're supposed to knock me down and then bring me back up a little bit, not just devastate me. So the further closer I get to Mankato, the madder I get, and I'm pissed by the time I get there. And I come driving down the road, and that little girl is playing a couple houses down, about three houses down, and she's seen my car coming, and she sprinted through the neighbor's yard. She couldn't get there fast enough. I couldn't even get the door open in time because she was there pounding on the glass. Daddy, I love you, and I missed you. And it was gone. Just like that, it was gone. All that hate and resentment and fear, it was just gone. It became very clear to me that what I want doesn't matter. What I need to do does. And because of that, you know, I'm a better father today. I'm not a perfect father. We eat junk food after 10 o'clock at night. Perks. I firmly believe that that she's a big part of my sobriety. Not that she can keep me sober, but that she can show me the next right action. I firmly believe that that all of you are very important to my sobriety too. By watching your life and being a part of your life, I realize just how valuable this thing is. And that I would have nothing if I wasn't here. Nothing. There isn't a chance for a person like me out there if I'm not here. I know that. You know, every time I start to feel sorry for myself, maybe I'm a little too busy. Why haven't I met her? Why is this going on? I'm not comfortable with that. None of that really matters. All that really matters is that I'm here with you. This is my life. You know, I have my family back today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have friends in my life today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a contact with a higher power that I don't understand all the time, but I know loves me all the time because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that if I can be a part of your life, he's stronger in my life, and it's easier to be me. You know, I can't predict what's going to happen in the future. I'm simple. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know this. If you are uncomfortable in your life tonight, if you're an alcoholic, if you think that you need to change something, this is the right place to be. Maybe I didn't say anything that'll help you, but somebody here will. Somebody here has your experience. Somebody here has done what you've done. They've felt the way you feel right now. And don't shortchange yourself by not coming back. You know, the only reason I'm here is because I kept coming back. And it's that simple. I keep coming back and it got a little better. And then it get a little worse. And then it get a little better. But by God, it's always here. I think that Northern Plains Group is the best home group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. I think that what we have here is very fortunate. I've been to AA some other places, and it's working for them, but I know this works for me, and this is where I need to be. I thank Matt for asking me to share. I thank all of you for allowing me to be a part of this meeting. God bless.